It's time for Tonia's Kitchen, taking you around the world of food and wine. Here is Tonia King.
My guest today is Joe Yogurts, and today we're talking about a pretty exciting new project from National Geographic, 50 States, 1,000 Eats. Thanks for joining me, Joe.
Thanks for having me today, Tonia.
How did you get involved with this book?
Well, it's the seventh in a series I've written for National Geographic, going back to 2017 when the original 50 States book came out. And I had worked with them for 10 or 15 years at that point on as a team on different books. And I said to my editor, I said, can I have a whole book? And she said, okay, we've got this one coming up called 50 States. And how would you like to do that? I said, perfect. And I was lucky enough that it was a bestseller, sold around 500,000 copies since it came out. And it was so successful. They said, okay, let's do another. And that was successful. And so it just one thing led to another. And this is now the seventh in the series.
So Joe, are you a true foodie?
I like to eat.
Well, I mean, when 1,000 eats, I mean, you definitely checked out a lot of places. So that, you know, I was wondering if that's at the heart of things.
I am a travel writer. I am not a restaurant critic and I am not a food writer. I am someone who travels a lot, who looks for interesting places to eat at the places I go to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course it does. Of course it does. It sounds like a fun job, actually.
It is. And so the book is really an accumulation of places that I've eaten or cultures that I've eaten are familiar with really my whole life. And it's a collaborative effort because there's no way that I could have eaten at 1,000 places in a year.
Right.
So it's places I've eaten over the course of doing seven of these books and the other Nat Geo books before that, asking family and friends about their favorite places, the editors at National Geographic in DC, who mostly live in Maryland and Northern Virginia, have their favorite places there, and also the states or cities where they grew up in or went to college in. So it's really a team effort, very much so, even more than the past books, because you can visit a lot of places. You can visit 20 places in a day when you're on the road, but you can't eat at 20 places.
So. That's true. But it sounds pretty neat in the fact that it's everything from farm to table hotspots, as you mentioned here, to food trucks, to diners. The variety is really incredible, and it's a great resource for people who like to travel and find good places to eat.
Yeah, that was the idea, was it's not really for the town that you live in, and to a large extent, not even for the state that you live in. It's when you're going on vacation somewhere or a business trip or a family trip, whatever it is, and you feel like investigating some interesting places to eat, this is a good reference for that. So if you live in Maine and you're going to Arizona, then, you know, look up the Arizona chapter and vice versa. If you live in Phoenix and you're going to Portland, Maine, then, you know, check out some places in the book that you can eat in Portland.
Now, are there any that stand out to you? Or did you have any favorites that you checked out that you'd like to share with us?
In terms of meals or restaurants or?
Yeah, food destinations.
Wow, every place has something interesting, I find. It's always the unusual things where you don't expect to find them. My favorite steak, funny enough, wasn't in the United States. It was in the Canadian Rockies.
And
it was,
wow.
Alberta is famous for beef. So
yeah.
That shouldn't come as too much of a surprise. At the 1888 Chop House at the Banff Springs Hotel in Banff, Canada. And it was a filet mignon that was just out of this world, that just melted in your mouth. And I really remember that. One of the best Japanese meals I had, believe it or not, was in Boston at Oya restaurant, where they have this 20-course omakase meal, and also a place called Zuma and the Four Seasons Hotel that has amazing Japanese food. Because both of my kids went to school in Boston, I got to eat in a lot of places there. There's a great Peruvian place in Somerville called Celeste, and the Town Meeting Bistro Inn at Hastings Park in Lexington, two places I really remember a lot. Ice Cream Arlington, place called Scoop and Scootery for ice cream. I mean, my kids turned me on to that. So,
but you know, that's exciting, right? Yeah. That you find these places and the food is so good that you really remember it and maybe can't wait to go back.
Oh yeah, for sure. There really are great places everywhere. And I kind of look for mom and pop restaurants, roadside diners, places that have been around forever that have some history. There's a place in Springfield, Massachusetts called the Student Prince.
Oh, I know it
It kept
well.
that has German food, right?
Yeah.
Schnitzel and Wurst and Sauerbraten and things. It's like, who would have known? I mean, you go to Springfield for basketball, right? And not
Right.
German food. So. And then I had a friend who went to Hampshire College, and he said, "Oh, there's this place called the Atkins Country Market,
Oh, yeah.
and they have this amazing ice cream stand there, the Orchard Run ice cream." And I've had to go to Hampshire College, and it was during summer break. There were no students around, but I had to have the ice cream because this guy who now lives in New York City raved about his college ice cream so much.
And did it pass your test?
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially in the summer on a hot day in central Massachusetts.
Oh,
I guess they
yes.
consider that Western Massachusetts, but and yeah, I mean you really do find amazing things. I one time visiting our kids in college in Boston, my wife and I, we'd never been to Cape Cod, so we decided to go out there and stay and found some interesting places in, Wellfleet and whatever. And we went down to Provincetown, to P-Town, and rather than eating in a fancy restaurant, we found this place called the Provincetown Portuguese Bakery that's been around since the 1930s, and they have these amazing Portuguese pastries and breads there. So you never know what you're going to find.
And that's what I think is just so exciting. I love being able to travel myself and discover new venues to try out. The photography in this book is pretty incredible. Who did that?
It is. None of that is mine. I don't take credit for any of that. That's the incredible archives of photography at National Geographic, which is not open to the public, but I've had to write captions for a couple of other books in the past, and I have had access to their photo archives, and I just spend hours going down rabbit holes looking at photos in their archives, going back to the 1880s. It's really a remarkable asset that it's too bad there's not some kind of online museum that people can visit. Maybe someday they'll have that. But they've had so many amazing photographers over the years, from food to nature to wildlife to everything.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We're talking with Joe Yogers. Did I get that right, Joe?
You got it absolutely right.
About the brand new book from National Geographic, 50 States, 1,000 Eats. Now, is this available to check out online at all to find out more details about this book?
Yeah, if you go to the National Geographic book site or Amazon Books or Barnes and Noble online, it will be available to buy or to check out there. I know Amazon usually has a couple of sample pages you can look at free online. There is a Kindle copy available if you want to download it to an iPad or a Kindle. And of course the paper copy, which is I like paper books still.
Me too. There is nothing better than just browsing through the pages. Do you have any others that really stood out to you? Any other places or any other food? There's so much in here.
Well, yeah, what I discovered, my mother was from Arizona and I grew up in San Diego, so I always had Mexican food. In this book, researching this book, I basically discovered that each of the four border states has completely different what we would call Mexican food to the point where I wouldn't even classify them as the same genre. From Tex-Mex in San Antonio to classic New Mexico food in Santa Fe and Taos to Sonoran food in Tucson, to fish tacos on the beach in San Diego. Mexican food is so many different things. And of course, if you go to Mexico, it's from state to state, it's totally different. But I never realized how different it was until I started doing this book. Also, ethnic foods and how much ethnic foods are a big part of traditional Midwest eating. The immigrants who went there from Poland and Germany and Scandinavia really ha left their mark. Their continuing mark on the foods of those states, the classic foods, whether it's Finnish pancakes in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, Norwegian lutefisk in Minnesota and North Dakota, things like that. German beer in Wisconsin and Chicago, the German style beer that's still there, even in the craft beer world, that a lot of European immigrants from Scandinavia, Eastern and Central Europe really have left their mark on the regional cuisines in the Midwest.
I would think lots of different pizza as you traveled across the country as well. You know, pizza is
Well,
different in
yes, there is.
Chicago than it is in
It's
Boston or New York.
and New York and clam sauce in Connecticut and
Right. Chowder.
Hawaii. Hawaii has the pineapple and ham, the Hawaiian pizza. St. Louis has one that is totally different because they make it with this local version of Velveeta cheese, if you remember Velveeta cheese.
Oh my goodness, yes.
So St. Louis pizza is totally different again. And I think pizza is really one of the most versatile foods of any foods. You can put anything on it and it's usually good. I mean, I'm not a big anchovy fan on pizzas, but I'll try it with just about anything else. And I think that's the beauty of pizza. There's nothing like a cheese and pepperoni. I could eat that every day. For the rest of my life, I could eat that. But I like the variation.
It also applies, I think, to cocktails as well. Were you able to try different cocktails all over the place?
Yes. sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But mixologists, you know, bartenders, they're always experimenting. I think that goes along with the job. If you're really into your job as a bartender and it's your career rather than a summer job, I think you want to invent the next, you know, great thing in cocktails. And I think that's how a lot of our famous cocktails got invented, was guys, you know, just tinkering around behind the bar, seeing what mixes worked and what don't. And again, you find some of the most unlikely places. There's a martini bar in Bismarck, North Dakota, that's out of this world.
Oh my goodness.
And they have a Teeny Tuesday that for $5 a martini, so you can go there. And for $25, you can try 5 different types of martinis.
Wow. Wow.
And then hopefully take an Uber back to your hotel.
Yes, exactly. Now, that's very interesting. I would never have expected that in North Dakota.
No, I know. It's true. You think of big cities as being the cocktail places.
Right.
But, you know, they're everywhere these days. Craft beer is everywhere these days.
Oh,
you
yes.
You know, it started in Oregon in the late 1980s when the state changed the law and said that you could manufacture and sell your own homemade beer. And that was the first craft, very small craft breweries, and other states caught on. And now I think Colorado and California are the two biggest. Where I live in San Diego, we have like 150 craft breweries.
It's amazing how it's exploded, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yes. To the point where they forced the big brewers to have their own craft brands or to buy up the two of the big ones in San Diego got bought up for like $1 billion each. And I no longer consider them craft breweries, but I still like the small ones. I have a little neighborhood, instead of a neighborhood pub, I have my local little neighborhood craft brewery. New English is what it's called. So
that's great. And it's great. I like to be able to support those guys.
Yeah, I do too.
We're talking with Joe Yogerst, and the book is called 50 States, 1,000 Eats from National Geographic. Any other exciting tips, places, food that you'd like to share with me?
Well, like I said, there's good food everywhere. You never know what you're going to get. I was, you know, the book I'm working on now is a family travel book, which will be out. I'm actually working on two books for National Geographic. One is called The Traveler's Atlas of the World, which will be out in a year. I'm writing chapters on 14 different foreign countries, and I just got back from Bolivia, which has an amazing food culture that I never realized until I got there. And one of the first trips I took in the U.S. for this was to Oregon, and I just happened to find an amazing Thai restaurant in Portland. I knew it had craft breweries because I'd been there to drink the beer before, but who knew that Portland was going to have amazing Thai food? But I found it there. And so you kind of never know what you're going to find. Utah has a lot of unique Mormon foods that you can mostly find in people's houses and homes or like picnics or special events, but they're really, really hard to find in restaurants.
What do you consider Mormon food?
Things that they invented that are traditional Mormon Sunday dishes, funeral dishes, wedding dishes, picnic dishes, things like that. And a lot of them are just kind of thrown together from what's in the fridge or what's in the, you know, green Jell-O salad is a hugely popular Mormon. I grew up with that because, again, my mom's from Arizona.
Wow.
She went to high school in Ogden, Utah, and Las Vegas. So somewhere along the line, even though she wasn't Mormon, she picked up green Jell-O salad.
Now, what's in it?
Green Jell-O with pineapple, of course.
I'm also thinking, is there some kind of yogurt or something as well? Like, what is there a sauce in there of some type?
No. It's straight up wiggly, jiggly, gelatin, green
with
jello.
Pineapples.
With pineapple floating in it, yes. They have they have funeral potatoes, which obviously was made for the wakes after funerals. That's really a casserole that has potatoes, cream of chicken soup, cornflakes and sour cream in it. One of the weirdest things is the Hawaiian haystack, which is steamed rice covered in chicken, chow mein noodles, shredded coconut, vegetables, canned pineapple, whatever else you've got in the fridge. That's a Hawaiian haystack. These are very traditional Mormon dishes, and they're really hard to find in restaurants. But I wish there were specialty restaurants in Utah that had these things. But unfortunately, they don't.
So did you get invited over to somebody's house to try them or something?
Well, you know, I was lucky enough. One of my roommates in college worked at Summers in Utah, and I worked in Las Vegas during Summers. So we had a lot of Mormon friends. So we got invited over for meals. So that's how I know these things from summer college jobs and working with Mormon kids and having them come over to their house. You know, Las Vegas, huge Mormon population, which not a lot of people know. But so I worked with a bunch of Mormon kids there at the airport and got invited over to their parents' homes for meals and stuff. So
my goodness, it sounds like a great way to discover culinary traditions throughout the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah, it was. You know, Canada, too. We did all the provinces in Yukon Territory, had some amazing meals there all the way across. They have some of their own very unique meals that are not found outside of Canada. Some are really tasty. Some, I think, like the seafood that they eat in Newfoundland and places, is an acquired taste.
Yeah.
The Yukon Territory, even though it's out in the middle of nowhere, has surprisingly good food and a great restaurant culture, especially in Whitehorse, which is the capital. A lot of young people have moved up there, and they've opened up new restaurants. And it's a really exciting small. It's only got about 100,000 people, but Whitehorse has an amazing restaurant and craft beer culture.
Who would have ever thought?
I know. I didn't until
exactly.
I was going there to find out what they ate, and I was just blown away by how good the food scene was.
And see, that's why this book is so valuable, because whenever you're traveling, like you said, just pick it up and check out the best places to eat and drink. We're talking with Joe Yogurts and the National Geographic book, 50 States, 1,000 Eats. Thanks so much for your time today, Joe. It was really fun chatting.
It was. Thanks for having me. And I hope to see you in the future. Talk again.
So absolutely.
Take care.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll subscribe to this podcast as we continue to take you around the world of food and wine on Tonia's Kitchen.